This is the voice of the Trumpet Magazine. News, economy, politics, trends, discovery, health, family, the Bible, the future. This is Trumpet Hour.
Good morning. I appreciate you listening today. I'm Joel Hilliker. For most of the past century, the United States of America has been the world's single greatest guarantor of global stability. Without America's might in World Wars I and II, Britain, France, and the rest of Europe would have been trampled under the boot of a German-led military takeover. After the Second World War, America stimulated the fastest period of growth in Europe's history, providing massive aid that propelled the ravaged continent toward cooperation and prosperity. America rebuilt and stabilized war-torn Asia. It significantly helped Japan and South Korea, the Philippines, China, India, Taiwan, and other nations to recover. And at the same time, America checked the spread of communism in Eastern Europe and throughout Asia, countering Soviet aggression and eventually bringing down another totalitarian empire with globalist ambitions. It's called Pax Americana, the period of relative world peace that the dominant American power has produced. It prevailed in the Western Hemisphere for most of the 20th century. It reigned throughout the Western world since World War II. Now, it hasn't been perfect. Since the end of the Second World War, there have been around 200 wars. The Cold War brought the globe to the edge of nuclear destruction. Dangerous powers have repeatedly threatened or invaded their neighbors. But it's easy to see how much worse off the world would have been without the United States. The post-World War II age has been called the Long Peace. There have been no full-scale wars between major powers. The number of battle deaths per 100,000 people has been at a historic low throughout this period. And why is that? Well, because of America. North Korea has mostly stayed out of war since 1953 because of the United States' commitment and presence on the Korean Peninsula. China has refrained from invading Taiwan because of U.S. opposition. Tiny Estonia hasn't been gobbled up by Russia because of America's promise to protect it. Since the fall of the Soviet Union in 1991, the United States has been the sole superpower, again, presiding over two decades free of any major wars between great powers. Now, this is why so many countries were so distressed by the events in Afghanistan this past week. And it's not just about the Middle East or Central Asia. America's sudden failure in Afghanistan shook the foundations of world peace. Other nations may be irritated and ungrateful at times, but deep down, many nations know they owe their existence to America's strength and reliability. Former U.S. Ambassador to NATO, Kurt Volker, warned that the costs of leaving Afghanistan may be even greater than the costs of staying. He said adversaries will be reinforced in their confidence that the United States does not have the will to win. America may have the resources, but it lacks the determination and stamina to achieve an outcome. To beat America, they will conclude, you just have to wait. It's really a lesson that is impossible not to take from these recent events. And you can be sure that nations and groups and individuals all over the world, both enemies and allies, are well aware of this lesson. Volker continued, if a band of brutal Islamist extremists can defeat the United States, China will have no doubt that with time, resources, and good organization, it will also prevail against the United States in its neighborhood. Russia will not take seriously any threat to push back on its military aggression and absorption of territory belonging to its neighbors. ISIS and Al-Qaeda will use the Taliban victory to renew calls for jihad against the United States. allies will become even more reluctant to commit troops and treasure to an American-led coalition when they know Americans can turn on a dime without so much as consulting those who have put their own soldiers' lives on the line. This really does mark the end of an era. Pax Americana joins Pax Britannica and Pax Romana. It is history. And the whole world is about to see what happens next. China is already salivating. The editorial board of the Global Times, that's China's state-run news agency, wrote directly to Taiwan with this threat. From what happened in Afghanistan, they should perceive that once a war breaks out in the Straits, the island's defense will collapse in hours and the U.S. military won't come to help. It says government authorities will quickly surrender while some high-level officials may flee by plane. Melanie Phillips wrote this: America's allies can now see that the U.S. is a faithless friend, the weak link in the chain of Western defenses, and with untold consequences for their own security. With America on its knees, other enemies of the West, Iran, China, Russia, must be rubbing their hands in glee over the opportunities for evil now opening up for them as a result. We're going to start today's Trumpet Hour by talking about why this is happening. It's bewildering and disillusioning to a lot of people, but the fact is, the Bible gives us crystal clear understanding about these recent events. It explains exactly why America has lost its leadership role in the world. In fact, it foretold that this would happen very explicitly. And the explanation the Bible gives is so critical for us to understand, because right now, many people can explain what is happening. They can tell you just how far America has fallen and how fast, but they cannot explain the true cause. What you get is a lot of finger pointing. Everyone is blaming someone else. It's the president's fault. It's the previous president's fault. It's bad advisors, bad generals, bad military leadership. It's a lack of foresight, a lack of planning. Well, all of these are actually symptoms of a much more serious and elemental cause. The Bible explains that cause, and it's not something you'll hear anyone else talking about. But you can't understand Afghanistan without understanding this. At the end of the program, for our last word, we'll look at what the Bible says is going to happen as a result of this loss of American power. It's a crucial biblical prophecy. Also on today's show, we have two other related segments. We'll hear a report from trumpet writer Brent Noctegal about how deeply involved Iran has been in Afghanistan and its dealings with the Taliban. It has pushed for the fall of the Afghan government and for the surrender of American forces. This is important to understand for a number of reasons, and it too illuminates a key biblical prophecy. We'll also hear a report from Watch Jerusalem contributor Chris Eames about the Taliban. What we're hearing from the Biden White House and a number of media reports is that we're dealing with a reformed Taliban. This isn't the same group that America went into Afghanistan to attack some 20 years ago. Well, that is sadly just wishful thinking or a flat-out lie, as we will come to see. But why has this happened? Why has America lost its power and its prestige so dramatically? Well, first of all, it's critical that you know the identity of America in end-time biblical prophecy. Herbert W. Armstrong proved this conclusively in his book, The United States and Britain in Prophecy, and it shows how America is the modern descendant of the ancient Israelite tribe of Manasseh. Ephraim and Manasseh were the birthright nations of Israel, and God promised them unmatched physical blessings to carry out a promise that he had made to Abraham. And that book shows how those birthright promises were fulfilled around the start of the 19th century by Britain and America, when suddenly these two powers rocketed to stunning world prominence. And of course, many in America and Britain would take credit for that rise to power. But the reality was that it was the great God who made that happen. And it wasn't because of the righteousness or the greatness of our people. It was because of prior promises God had made. And God always keeps his promises. But Scripture shows that keeping those promised blessings was conditional upon obedience to God, who gave those blessings. In fact, God promised that if we failed to obey him, if we cast him aside, if we ignored his laws and we went our own way contrary to him, that he would replace those blessings with curses. And that is what is driving this dramatic reversal of fortunes in these nations that we see in recent years, and particularly over the last couple of weeks. This has been in process for many years, but it is intensifying, and it is certain to get far worse in the time just ahead of us. In his book, The United States and Britain in Prophecy, Herbert W. Armstrong wrote, "Do you think so great a fall could not come to so great powers as Britain and America? Do you say it can't happen here? You need to wake up to the fact that the United States, even still possessing unmatched power, is afraid, fears to use it. Just as God said, I will break the pride of your power. That the United States has stopped winning wars, that America was unable, with all its vast power, to conquer little North Vietnam. The United States is fast riding to the greatest fall that ever befell any nation. The handwriting is on the wall." Well, I believe Mr. Armstrong wrote those words in 1980. He referenced America's withdrawal from Vietnam in 1975. Now, many analysts are saying that what is happening now in Afghanistan is worse than America's defeat and retreat from Saigon. Mr. Armstrong referenced Leviticus 26 and verse 19. And this is part of two really important prophetic chapters, Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28. These chapters are often referred to as the blessings and curses chapters. They're really worth reading in their entirety. But I'm going to read several verses from Leviticus 26 to you, and I just want you to ask yourself whether these curses are coming to pass in America today, more and more. Leviticus 26 and verse 14 says, "But if you will not hearken unto me and will not do all these commandments," verse 16, "I also will do this unto you. I will even appoint over you terror, consumption, and the burning ague that shall consume the eyes and cause sorrow of heart." Verse 17, "I will set my face against you, and you shall be slain before your enemies. They that hate you shall reign over you, and you shall flee when none pursues you." You could certainly view that as America's enemies ruling over us, but sadly, in many cases today, end time Israel's own leaders hate the people they rule. They show contempt for the common people, the deplorables, as they have called them. Verse 19 says, "And I will break the pride of your power." That's the verse that Mr. Armstrong quoted. And verse 20, "And your strength shall be spent in vain." In Afghanistan, America spent $273 million per day, and we lost more than two soldiers per week for 20 years straight. That's a lot of strength spent in vain. You look at all that weaponry and that massive airbase over there that is now in the hands of the Taliban, and the fact that this organization that we worked to drive out of that nation is now in even greater power and greater force than they were when we went in 20 years ago. That's strength spent in vain. Verse 25 says, "And when you're gathered together within your cities, I will send the pestilence among you, and you shall be delivered into the hand of the enemy." Verse 31, "And I'll make your cities waste." Just look at what is happening more and more in America's cities, with rising crime and rioting and unrest and homelessness, businesses moving out, whole sections shutting down and dying off. Verse 36 talks about God sending faintness into our hearts. It says, "The sound of a shaken leaf shall chase them, and they shall flee as fleeing from a sword. and they shall fall when none pursues. You could certainly look at that with respect to a situation like that in Afghanistan, but look even at how we've shuttered ourselves within our own homes out of fear of a flu bug. Deuteronomy 28 and verse 36 says, "You shall become an astonishment, a proverb, and a byword among all nations." You can certainly see that. Especially after what has happened in Afghanistan, nations are mocking the United States for this retreat. Some of them are lamenting, but there are quite a few that are openly gleeful at this loss of American prestige. You read through those chapters, Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28, and you see the purpose behind these curses is to turn us back to God. God is punishing us to try to help us see our sins. Mr. Armstrong wrote in The United States and Britain in Prophecy, "God's punishment only reflects God's love, turning us from causing evil results to the way that brings happy results. God is now about to stop us from bringing colossal evils on ourselves. God is not angry because we're harming him, but because we are harming ourselves, whom God loves." And several places in those chapters, God says, if in spite of all of this, all of these curses, all of this punishment, you don't turn back to me, then the curses are going to intensify. Now, the problem is, even as America is being grievously cursed, nobody will take responsibility. Joe Biden certainly won't. He keeps saying over and over that he's done everything right. And his staff apparently feel like they've handled everything perfectly. When anyone suggests anything to the contrary or expresses any criticism, they bristle up. This is what Joe Biden said in a speech last Monday.
"I stand squarely behind my decision. After 20 years, I've learned the hard way that there was never a good time to withdraw U.S. forces."
So he's watching all of this unfold. He's watching the chaos and the thousands of stranded Americans and the Afghans and the other nations that feel betrayed by what the United States has done. And he sees the devastation to America's international reputation. And in his mind, it all confirms that he made the right decision. This is from an interview with George Stephanopoulos last Wednesday.
"So you don't think this could have been handled? This actually could have been handled better in any way? No mistakes?"
"No, I don't think it could have been handled in a way that there, we're going to go back in hindsight and look. But the idea that somehow there's a way to have gotten out without chaos ensuing, I don't know how that happens."
What would this man have to see for him to recognize that this could have been handled better? Apparently, there's nothing about what's happening that makes him rethink things. Proverbs 26 and verse 12 says, "See you a man wise in his own conceit? There is more hope of a fool than of him." The inability to accept correction is a hallmark of this world. It doesn't matter how incontrovertible the evidence that they're wrong. It doesn't seem to matter how spectacular the failures brought about by their own hand. It doesn't matter how grievous the curses become. There are so many people that are seemingly incapable of saying, "I was wrong." You would think with this disaster unfolding, there would be some contrition on the part of these leaders. "We messed up. We failed to heed the warnings. We underestimated our enemy. We didn't plan this the way that we should have." And you just don't hear any of that. They just keep doubling down on their disastrous errors. In Isaiah 9, the prophet says this, "The Lord sent a word into Jacob, and it has lighted upon Israel. And all the people shall know, even Ephraim and the inhabitant of Samaria, that say in the pride and stoutness of heart, 'The bricks are fallen down, but we will build with hewn stones. The sycamores are cut down, but we will change them into cedars.'" This is talking about disaster that's falling upon the nation, and the people just say, "Well, we're just going to rebuild stronger than ever." They don't take this as correction. Gerald Flory wrote in his booklet, Isaiah's End Time Vision, Israel is collapsing, but people still try to solve their problems themselves instead of turning to God. This passage in Isaiah 9 continues, therefore the Lord shall set up the adversaries of Rezin against him and join his enemies together, the Syrians before, the Philistines behind, and they shall devour Israel with open mouth. For all this, his anger is not turned away, but his hand is stretched out still. For the people turns not unto him that smites them, neither do they seek the Eternal of Hosts. This booklet says God is smiting the people of Israel, but they still won't repent, so the smiting must continue. Ancient Israel experienced this collapse, but this was only a type of what is to happen in this end time. This hard-heartedness, this unwillingness to turn to God in spite of the correction and the chastisement that we're experiencing, this is not just a problem with the Biden administration. This is the whole nation. Everyone seems to think that all of these problems are experiencing can be attributed to the other guy, the people in power. America is being hammered by all kinds of curses, economic curses, health curses, immigration curses, weather curses. This is a series of headlines yesterday morning on the front page of the Drudge Report, just less than an inch of space. These are headlines. Survivors grapple with aftermath of deadly Tennessee flood. It all happened in 6 minutes, more destructive than first estimated. Summer of extremes, drought worsens in Southern California, crops wither under scorching heat, Minnesota woods evacuated for fire threat, first time since 76. Now you have prophecies like Amos 4 verses 7 and 8 where God says, I caused it to rain upon one city and caused it not to rain upon another city. One piece was rained upon and the piece whereupon it rained not withered. And then he says, yet have you not returned unto me, says the Eternal. We're experiencing exactly these types of extremes and these types of curses, but we don't accept it as correction from God. Now what you have people doing is attributing everything like this to carbon emissions. It seems like just about every curse we experience these days, someone is going to attribute it to man-made global warming, rather than accepting the curses as correction. Somehow, they only seem to make people more convinced of their own righteousness. So what is God to do? We have to recognize that these are curses caused by our sins that are being committed on a massive scale. Sins of pride, of arrogance, of godlessness, sins of family breakdown, of immorality and lust, of materialism, of greed, of hatred and violence and idolatry. God is correcting us for these sins, and we have to recognize God behind this intensifying correction and return to him. The arrogance and the uncorrectability of man really has no earthly remedy, certainly not on the scale needed to fix the world and to turn the nations around. God is going to have to intervene personally, and he promises to do so. You can see Isaiah 2 that describes the sins of the nation of Israel and how people worship money. Verse 8 says, their land is also full of idols. They worship the work of their own hands, that which their own fingers have made. And God says this is going to change dramatically. Verse 10 says, enter into the rock and hide you in the dust for fear of the Eternal and for the glory of his majesty. The lofty looks of man shall be humbled, and the haughtiness of men shall be bowed down, and the Eternal alone shall be exalted in that day. That's talking about when Jesus Christ returns. At his second coming, all the arrogance and all the rebellion will cease. This is a promise. Verse 12 says, for the day of the Eternal of Hosts shall be upon everyone that is proud and lofty, and upon everyone that is lifted up, and he shall be brought low. The day of the Lord is going to humble the proud. They're the ones that need it the most. Verse 17 says, "And the loftiness of man shall be bowed down, and the haughtiness of men shall be made low, and the Eternal alone shall be exalted in that day, and the idols he shall utterly abolish, and they shall go into the holes of the rocks and into the caves of the earth for fear of the Eternal and for the glory of his majesty when he arises to shake terribly the earth." God has the power to humble mankind. There are a lot of powers now that are gloating over America's downfall, and even they need to be humbled. This is talking about people all over the earth being humbled. All men will realize how small and pitiful they are. This is what Gerald Fleury wrote in his booklet, The Epistles of Peter. God is going to take mankind to the point where people will know there is no hope in man, and they are willing to heed God's word, the Bible. The experiment of human government will prove itself a grandiose failure, and people will begin to recognize that they do need God's help. What a world that will be. When human arrogance has been leveled, people will be humble and childlike, ready to be taught by God. But to reach that stage, mankind must experience destruction just short of destroying all humanity, every man, woman, and child. How about you who are listening to this program? Will you need to receive greater and greater chastisement from God before you recognize how much you need Him? Or will you humble yourself before Him and realize how desperately you need God and allow yourself to be taught by God, even today? What suffering we can be protected from, even individually, if we will learn the lesson that America is sadly failing to learn today.
This is the voice of the Trumpet News Magazine. You're listening to Trumpet Hour.
The Taliban did not chase America out of Afghanistan alone. They had quite a lot of help over a period of years from one of America's greatest enemies, as we will now hear in this report from Brent Noctegal.
When Kabul fell to the Taliban, the prevailing opinion in the media was that Iran feared what would come next. Quote, "Taliban surge will force Iran to forge a new defensive strategy," reported Haaretz on August 13. Another headline, "Iran braces for life next door to Taliban once again." That was from Bloomberg. And then the German Deutsche Welle wrote, quote, "Afghanistan, Taliban offensive puts Iran in a bind." These three headlines were representative of the broad consensus that while Iran might be happy America is gone from Afghanistan, it's terrified of the Taliban. Yet that narrative is false. The Taliban coming to power in Afghanistan will not be a counter to Iranian hegemony in the Middle East. In fact, Iran not only planned for the eventual exit of the United States from Afghanistan, but they have also worked with the Taliban for almost a decade to bring it about. The forces of radical Islam, led by Iran, is set to receive a massive boost economically, militarily, and ideologically from the Taliban takeover. On the Spot reporter Shelley Kittleson was the only mainstream source to get it right. Writing from Kandahar for Foreign Policy, Kittleson documents several first-hand accounts of Iranian intervention inside Afghanistan that welcomed, encouraged, financed, and fought alongside the Taliban to push out the United States. Quote, "Several sources I spoke to on the ground across the country during a month-long reporting trip between July and August this year said that Iran has played a major role in the conflict." She continued, "While I was reporting from Kandahar, multiple security officials told me that Iranian weapons had been found in the hands of killed Taliban fighters in the area," end quote. She also notes that when a critical border crossing between Iran and Afghanistan fell to the Taliban in early July, Iranian officials welcomed them with open arms. Such acts of Iranian kindness towards the Taliban were also curiously timed in an underreported high-level visit by the Taliban to Tehran in July, in the middle of the Taliban's lightning offensive across Afghanistan. Yet these are only recent examples of a brotherly relationship between the once former enemies. A search through open source reporting reveals that Iran has long been allied with the Taliban for almost a decade. In 2013, representatives of the Taliban participated in a conference on Islam in Tehran. During the visit, footage captured Taliban officials embracing Iran's supreme leader. The Wall Street Journal reported that by the end of 2013, Afghan security officials had evidence that Iran was training Taliban fighters inside its borders. By 2015, the Taliban had its own footprint inside Iran. It had established four Taliban training bases in Iranian cities of Tehran, Mashhad, Zahedan, and in the province of Kerman. Initially, Iran was supporting the Taliban financially, noted a senior Afghan official to the Wall Street Journal in 2015. Quote, but now they are training and equipping them too, end quote. That same 2015 article interviewed a Taliban commander from central Afghanistan whose salary was paid by Iran, not the Taliban. He said, quote, Iran supplies us with whatever we need, end quote. In 2015, these supplies included 82mm mortars, light machine guns, AK-47 rifles, rocket-propelled grenades, and materials for making roadside bombs. This increased support for the Taliban was the direct result of the work of the now-deceased Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps Quds Force leader, General Qasem Soleimani. The Middle East Eye reported that in 2015, Soleimani visited Afghanistan, where several deals were made with the Taliban whereby Iran promised to, quote, provide unlimited financial and technical support to the group. Middle East Eye also reported that IRGC officers were sent to Afghanistan to train and advise Taliban fighters. Iran also provided safe haven for Taliban leadership as part of the agreements as well. In 2016, Afghan officials in Western Farah province announced that members of Iran's IRGC were embedded in the ranks of the Taliban. Farah provincial council head Jalila Amini told Radio France International at the time that 25 members of the Taliban that were killed in a December 2016 battle were actually proven to be members of the IRGC. A year later in 2017, the New York Times published an investigative piece entitled, quote, In Afghanistan, U.S. Exits and Iran Comes In, end quote. The report starts by recapping a three-week Taliban siege of the city of Farah, where only a massive bombardment by the United States could rescue the Afghan troops. Quote, Only when the smoke cleared did Afghan security officials realize who was behind the lightning strike, Iran. Among the deceased were four senior Iranian commandos, whose funerals later took place in Iran. The wounded from the battle were also sent back to Iran to recover. Reporting on the gravity of this Iranian-led attack, the New York Times wrote in 2017, quote, The assault, coordinated with attacks on several other cities, was part of the Taliban's most ambitious attempt since 2001 to retake power. But it was also a piece of an accelerating Iranian campaign to step into a vacuum left by departing American forces, Iran's biggest push into Afghanistan in decades. That was 2017. In 2018, several stories appeared in the mainstream media. Again, they further showcased Iran's role in the Taliban offensive. Iran funding Taliban to affect U.S. military presence in Afghanistan, say police and lawmakers. A headline from an Arab news piece said on May 27, 2018. A month later, on July 2, 2018, the Times of London featured a report written from Kabul by Anthony Lloyd entitled, Taliban's Best Fighters Being Trained by Iran. The first two paragraphs are shocking, considering the Taliban's takeover, just 3 years after this article appeared. Quote, Hundreds of Taliban fighters are receiving advanced training from special forces at military academies in Iran as part of a significant escalation of support for the insurgents, Taliban and Afghan officials have told the Times. The scale, quality, and length of the training is unprecedented and marks not only a shift in the proxy conflict between the US and Iran inside Afghanistan, but also a potential change in Iran's ability and will to affect the outcome of the Afghan war. Shortly before that Times piece, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo became the first to blow the cover off Iran's support for the Taliban. He stated, quote, "Iran's support to the Taliban in the form of weapons and funding leads to further violence and hinders peace and stability for the Afghan people," end quote. Through 2019, this funding also came in the form of bounties that were paid by Iran to the Taliban to target coalition forces in Afghanistan. According to a Pentagon briefing seen by CNN, the Haqqani network, which comprises part of the Taliban, was paid by Iran for at least six attacks against the United States or coalition forces in 2019. Fast forward 3 years, and the Haqqani network is the specific segment of the Taliban that is currently in charge of the security situation in Kabul. And so, in wicked irony, the same terrorists that Iran paid to attack the United States forces in 2019 are now supposedly working with the United States in order to safeguard American citizens as they transit to the Kabul airport. On December 11, 2019, the Haqqani network of the Taliban executed a well-planned attack on the Bagram airbase in Afghanistan involving 10 of its members and an explosive-laden vehicle. It took U.S. airstrikes to repel the attack. Two civilians were killed in the attack, 70 others were injured, including four American personnel. This highly underreported event also took place less than a month before President Donald Trump ordered the killing of Quds Force leader General Qasem Soleimani. The justification for his assassination was a strike that had killed a U.S. contractor in Iraq in late December. However, United States government officials told CNN that Soleimani's push into Afghanistan was also part of the justification for his assassination. Nevertheless, the death of Soleimani on January 2, 2020 did not slow Iran's support for the Taliban. Instead, Soleimani's number two, Ismail Qani, took over as head of the Quds Force. His domain of expertise was Afghanistan. Javed Ahmad and Hossein Haqqani, no relation to the Taliban group, wrote this for The Hill on February 6, 2020, in a piece entitled "What Does Soleimani's Death Mean for Afghanistan?" Quote, "Even though Soleimani's death has affected Iranian subversive activities across the greater Middle East, its Afghanistan portfolio might actually get a boost because the man who managed it as Soleimani's deputy is now his successor." General Ismail Qani, whose adventures in Afghanistan traces back to the 1980s, has been the principal architect between cultivating and directing Afghan armed proxies and jihadist cells. It has cost Tehran millions of dollars to operate its Afghan proxies, including the Taliban factions. Soon after Qani's takeover, sophisticated anti-tank guided missiles likely from Iran started to appear on the Afghanistan battlefield. According to the reporting in the New York Times last July, two coalition Black Hawk helicopters were hit by the weapon. They wrote this, quote, "American and Afghan officials claim the weapons used in both strikes were most likely supplied by Iran, but they offered no evidence to support this assertion. The accusation would be alarming if true, as the influx of anti-tank guided missiles could not only give the Taliban a tactical advantage over the Afghan military, but also suggest Tehran was trying to undermine the American mission as it's poised to wind down." We're now 1 year on from this article, and the New York Times reporting seems almost prophetic. Now, evidence of the collapse of the Afghan military in the face of the abandonment of the United States military has been well reported. But as witnessed in the evidence provided here, Iran's connection to the current Taliban offensive has been completely ignored by the press. From open source reporting, it's clear that since 2015, Iran has had an active role in equipping, funding, and training the Taliban as Tehran worked to remove the United States from Afghanistan. America's defeat in Afghanistan is not just the work of the Taliban, but it's a surrender to radical Islamic forces led by Iran as well. In the November 2003 issue of The Trumpet, Editor-in-Chief Gerald Flory prophesied that America's war on terrorism would be a failure. The Bible forecast this would be the case, but it was also evident in the United States strategy. It's worth reading the entire article. But consider a few of these resounding statements from almost 20 years ago. Quote, "We lack the will to win a bloody, protracted war. The fruits and evidence of the past two decades overwhelmingly prove where the king of state-sponsored terrorism is. The whole world can see that. However, the solution to terrorism lies in doing something about it. We must confront the source. The terrorist movement flows from Iran. One more quote. It's an act of war to finance terrorists. The supporters of terrorism are more guilty than the terrorists. They make it all possible. If America and Britain held the terrorist-supporting nations accountable, we would drain the terrorist swamp. They should be given one clear warning to stop. If they don't, then strong action should be taken. If the Iranian leadership were eliminated, the whole course of Middle East history would change radically for the better, because it is the king. Sadly, though, Bible prophecy reveals that will not happen. End quote. And indeed, that hasn't happened. America has been unable to win in Iraq because it refused to go after the head of the terrorist snake, Iran. America has now been defeated in Afghanistan for the very same reason. This was the trumpet forecast from 20 years ago. Without a doubt, Iran will emerge far stronger from the Taliban takeover of Afghanistan. Prophesying defeat, though, is a gloomy forecast to make on the face of it. However, there is also a triumphant hope that exists in knowing those forecasts were made based on the Bible. These prophesied defeats reveal that there is still a plan being worked out here below. And if those prophecies were fulfilled, the other gloriously joyful prophecies will be fulfilled as well. To learn of the only hope in Afghanistan's fall to the Iranian-backed Taliban and where your focus should be, please read Joel Hilliker's column from last week, Prophecy is Fulfilled in Afghanistan.
This is Trumpet Hour with Joel Hilliker.
The Biden White House and a number of media reports say that the Taliban today is different than it was when America went into Afghanistan to attack them 20 years ago. Is that true? We'll learn the answer in this report from Christopher Eames.
If you've been paying any attention at all to news coming out of Afghanistan, you'll know that the Biden administration is holding out hope that the Taliban will prove to be responsible diplomatic partners, a sort of new moderate, friendly Taliban. As Biden has expressed in his recent press conferences, quote, "We've discussed a lot with the Taliban. They've been cooperative. We're in constant contact with the Taliban, working to ensure civilians have safe passage. We've been in constant contact with the Taliban leadership on the ground in Kabul, as well as the Taliban leadership at Dalai." Now, one of these press conferences, a reporter pressed Biden, asking the following: "Because the United States is now negotiating with the Taliban over airport access and such, do you now trust them?" And Biden gave this response: "Look, the Taliban has to make a fundamental decision. Is the Taliban going to attempt to be able to unite and provide for the well-being of the people of Afghanistan? So far, they have, by and large, followed through on what they said." And then another reporter pressed him on whether or not the U.S. would apply sanctions, quote, "if they misbehave." And to this, Biden replied, saying that it depends on the conduct. So in my new Trumpet article, what I do is take the reader through some incidents over the past several weeks that, shall we say, logically call into question the misbehavior, to put it the same way as the journalist, of the Taliban. Because after all, as Biden emphasized in his August 20th press conference, America's relationship with the Taliban, quote, "will depend on how well they treat women and girls, how they treat their citizens." So here's a quick rundown of some of these incidents. Reporting here from Bloomberg 2 weeks ago revealed that in parts of Afghanistan, the Taliban are going from door to door, compiling lists of women and girls aged between 12 and 45 years old for their fighters to forcibly marry. And other reports affirm the same thing, that girls as young as 12 are being turned into sex slaves for Taliban fighters who see them as spoils of war. Other reports tell of women being ordered by militants to serve their fighters meals. There was an incident that occurred a week or two ago in the north of Afghanistan. Taliban fighters set a woman on fire for bad cooking. A few weeks earlier, another woman, another case with a woman who was ordered to provide food. She wasn't able to because of the family poverty situation. And the Taliban fighters beat her to death with the butts of their AK-47 rifles and then threw grenades into the house. And this was all detailed by the daughter of this woman. There's numerous reports that have come out lately detailing the ongoing Taliban hunt and execution of any they consider to be their enemies, going door to door, such as Afghans who supported the American war effort. One such individual, this was a translator, he had his United States Department of Defense ID card melted into his chest, his arms removed. He was hung in the street and his whole family was killed, all except for his 10-year-old daughter, who, of course, was given to the leadership. And you've got all manner of enemies, so-called by the Taliban, who they are hunting down door to door. These include reporters. For example, here, German reporters. You've got a DW journalist, that's Deutsche Welle, who was being hunted down by the Taliban. One member of his family was killed. Another was seriously injured. The reporter is now back in Germany, and the rest of his family are on the run. The homes of at least three Deutsche Welle journalists have been raided. And another German publication, Die Welt, a translator and contributor to this publication, was executed in the middle of the street by men that, according to the German report, they believed to be Taliban. Then you've got the Taliban hunt for Christians. This was an official statement that was put out by the leaders in the underground church, as they call themselves, a church that's gone underground in Afghanistan. And they're saying that that there is a Taliban hit list of Christians, that the Taliban are going from door to door taking women and children, that the houses must be marked with an X if they have a girl 12 years or older, so that the Taliban can take them for their own. If the houses are not marked, then everyone inside will be executed. If the house is found to house a girl 12 years or older. If the Christian women are married, if they're, say, a 25-year-old or older woman who is married, then the husbands will be killed, the women will be taken, and they will be sold as sex slaves. The statement says the following, quote, "Husbands and fathers have given their wives and daughters guns and told them that when the Taliban come, they can choose to kill them or kill themselves. It is their choice." Another Middle East media ministry states that the Taliban are pulling people off public transport and killing them on the spot if they're Christians or considered to be ethnically impure. People are having their phones checked, and if they are found to have a downloaded Bible on their phones, they will be killed on the spot. So again, let me state, this is Biden's so-called new moderate Taliban. A Taliban of whom we'll have to just wait and see how they treat their people in order to decide about having diplomatic relations. Is there anything really to wait and see about this Taliban? Is this a reformed Taliban? The list of crimes goes on and on. Amnesty International reported that in July, quote, "Taliban fighters tortured and murdered at least 9 ethnic Hazara men after capturing the province of Ghazni. One of these victims had the muscles sliced off of his arms. Another individual was hauled away to an uncertain fate for displaying an Afghan flag on his dashboard of his car. A group of young Afghan youths were held at gunpoint and flogged across their necks for wearing jeans, the crime of wearing jeans. You've got the Taliban who are forcing all women out of civil servant jobs to be replaced by men. So this narrative that the Taliban have so far sought to strike a more moderate tone, is that what we see? Do we see moderation This is really a delusional assessment. And besides that, there's the fact that we've heard all this before. We've heard all this before from the Taliban. And when was that? It was before 9/11 happened, some 25 years ago. This is the following is from a recently published Spectator article entitled, "Don't Be Fooled, the Taliban Hasn't Changed." This is what the Spectator says, quote, 25 years ago, when the Taliban took over Kabul, they declared that it was not going to take revenge, instead offering amnesty to anyone who had worked for the former government. The exact statement assured the population that the Taliban will not take revenge. We have no personal rancor, they said. Soon after that promise was made, the ousted president, Mohammad Najibullah, was castrated and strung up from a lamppost at the center of Kabul. The article goes on to state that the Taliban have always returned to their core identity and beliefs. So they lied. They lied then, and they lie again today. And it should be no surprise, because the leaders of the movement are still some of the same people that they were back then, including one of them, one of the original Taliban leaders himself. So to pretend that they are reformed organization is just lunacy. Clearly, what we have seen over the past 2 months, let alone the past 2 decades, shows that the Taliban cannot be trusted. But what the world has also seen, conversely, is that the US cannot be trusted. We're entering really into a truly bizarre post-American world. And Bible prophecy describes this post-American setting that we are living in to a T. It calls it the times of the Gentiles, a post-American world of vicious powers, dog-eat-dog powers on the world scene in the end time. And in many of these end time prophecies, the term used to describe America is nowhere to be found. That's because the nation has become a non-entity on the world scene at that point. And now that may have been hard to believe, say, even just a year ago. But now, particularly with what we're seeing in Afghanistan, that picture of a post-American world is becoming tragically clear. So despite the Biden administration's position, there's assuredly no hope in the Taliban. There's also no saving hope for Afghanistan in America. That sole hope lies in the Messiah, as the Bible describes in the soon coming return of Jesus Christ to overthrow these Gentile powers, as described in Luke 21, and to rule, as the Bible describes it, with a rod of iron. That rod of iron is necessary because human regimes like the Taliban, they despise weakness and respect only power. And what we've seen come out of America over the last 2 weeks has been utter weakness and capitulation to an entirely unrepentant and unchanged terrorist organization.
It's time for today's last word.
What will happen in the wake of America's retreat from Afghanistan? What will happen now that America's power has been exposed for its hollowness? The answer was specifically prophesied by Jesus Christ. Though this fact is ignored by many Christians today, the Bible is a book full of prophecy from Genesis to Revelation. There's so much that it's not possible to truly believe the Bible is the Word of God and not study prophecy. During Christ's ministry, his disciples asked, "What will be the sign of your coming and of the close of the age?" You can read that in Matthew 24 and verse 3. Jesus responded by warning them of specific events to beware when the close of the age came. And you can read this in Matthew 24 and Mark 13 and Luke 21. And he concluded with these words, "Watch you therefore and pray always, that you may be accounted worthy to escape all these things that shall come to pass and to stand before the Son of Man." In one of these specific signs, Christ said that the people of Jerusalem would, quote, fall by the edge of the sword and shall be led away captive into all nations, and Jerusalem shall be trodden down of the Gentiles until the times of the Gentiles be fulfilled. Well, who are the Gentiles? If we want to do what Jesus Christ said and we want to watch for this sign, we have to know. The common idea that any non-Jew is a Gentile is false. In the first book of the Bible, Genesis 49 lists the 12 tribes of Israel and prophesies their fate in the last days. So this means that these 12 tribes must exist today as separate individual entities. The identity of the Jews, the descendants of Judah, is well known, but what about those other tribes? Herbert W. Armstrong's The United States and Britain in Prophecy proves from the Bible that the modern identities of those tribes include the United States and Britain, as well as other English-speaking nations. The nation of Israel split into two separate kingdoms after the death of King Solomon. The northern nation became known as Israel and the southern as Judah. The kingdom of Israel went into captivity in 721 BC, but books of the Bible written long after the fact contain warnings to both Israel and Judah of impending captivity. Now, what's the point of that? Why warn Israel several hundred years after they went into captivity? You can see in Jeremiah 5, verses 11 through 15, as an example, this specifically mentions both Israel and Judah, and it warns Israel that it will be taken captive, quote, by a nation whose language you know not. So this passage is clearly not using Israel as a generic term for the Jews. Israel and Judah are mentioned separately. And there are a lot of other places in Jeremiah that give similar warnings. And this book was written 100 years after Israel went into captivity. The minor prophets contain similar messages. Even the prophets who lived after Judah returned from Babylon warned of a future captivity for Israel and Judah. Why is that? Well, the book of Jeremiah explicitly states that it was written for the latter days. So the only explanation is that Israel would come out of captivity and again be conquered in the end time. Christ prophesied that we are about to enter a time when America's and Britain's global influence will be snuffed out, and Gentile powers, that is, non-Israelite nations that are specified in other prophecies, will wreak unimaginable havoc on the earth. Jerusalem, the literal city located in modern-day Judah, will be trodden down of the Gentiles. Revelation 11, verse 2 also shows how the Gentiles shall tread underfoot the holy city for 42 months, or 3.5 years. But Bible prophecy also uses Jerusalem, which was the capital of ancient Israel, to symbolize all of modern Israel. That's chiefly the Americans and the British. This seismic shift in geopolitical momentum away from America and toward a collection of non-Israelite Gentile powers, accompanied by an escalation in brutal violence in war. We're already seeing this line up perfectly to unfold in precise accordance with the Bible's prophetic outline. Soon, we're going to look back on the problems that are making headlines today and recognize that they were merely, as Jesus Christ said, the beginning of sorrows. He said that at the beginning of Matthew 24. It's just the beginning. It's going to get far, far worse. But when you understand the times of the Gentiles and all of these prophecies that mention this period of suffering that's just ahead of us, as dark as times are about to get, this really is ultimately good news, because it is one of the signs Jesus Christ gave of his imminent return. Pay close attention, watch and pray about what is happening right now on the world scene, and you can put your hope in the new world governed by God, which will begin soon. The darkness and the evil that are about to flood this globe presage the most wonderful news in human history. I'm Joel Hilliker, and that will do it for today's Trumpet Hour. You can send me any thoughts on today's program to letters@thetrumpet.com. Thanks to my guests, Brent Noctegal and Chris Eames, and thanks to Nick Irwin and Dwight Falk for engineering and production. I'll leave you with this thought from Marcus Aurelius. Do not consider anything for your interest which makes you break your word, quit your modesty, or inclines you to any practice which will not bear the light or look the world in the face. Thank you for joining us on Trumpet Hour. Until next time, keep watching your world.
You've been listening to Trumpet Hour on Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG, and online at kpcg.fm. Understand your world.